Please be warned that this program contains mature subject matter and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
She had a green light on me, and she needs to find me and kill me at all costs. If I show up somewhere or somebody finds me, kill me.
You're listening to My Aryan Princess from the Dallas Morning News, written by Scott Farwell and edited by Mike Wilson and Leona Allen. I'm Christopher Wynn. Chapter 5, The General and the Featherwood.
Odessa is a straight shot west of Dallas, 5 hours across a wide open prairie toward the bobbing oil derricks of the Permian Basin. A frontier of wildcatters, roughnecks, and a small but violent cell of the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas. Carol looked forward to these trips. The scenery stirred her as cities gave way to suburbs, rural homesteads to remote outposts, until the droning road broke free, unspooling in sepia colors of the southwest. But Zen was not the only draw. She enjoyed the private time with Skits, the way pretense and titles like General and Featherwood fell away, leaving two people trapped in the cab of a truck with nothing to do but talk. The vibe felt familiar but tense when Carol climbed into the front seat and kissed the 50-year-old's cheek on New Year's Day, 2013. Skits was wary. "I'd feel a lot better if you took the battery out of your phone," he said. "In fact, give it to me." He dropped the pieces in the center console, and moments later, merged onto the Bush Turnpike in Plano. Silence hung between them, like frost creeping across a windshield. 2 months earlier, the feds had nearly decapitated the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas when they unsealed a 34-count indictment that named every senior officer in the gang, except Skits. He knew his days were numbered. The government had built its case on inside information, from spies embedded with the gang, like Carol, and by squeezing ABT members arrested in the organized crime conspiracy. Around Texas, the Brotherhood's suspicions turned inward. In Odessa, the distrust focused on Carol. By rule, the ABT doesn't murder members without proof. But in practice, Carol knew it could happen easily. One whiff of meth-inspired paranoia, one wrong word. Skits had always protected her in Odessa and put down persistent doubts about her loyalty. Carol wouldn't survive without him. The general stopped in Benbrook to buy dope. He dropped Carol at McDonald's. Using a Kindle and public Wi-Fi, she sent her government handler Steve Lair a message. "Can't have my phone until we get to Odessa, and maybe not then. In the event I get tied up and tortured when we stop in Abilene, or I get taken out in the desert and killed in Odessa." The feds spun into action. Agents around the state debated ways to rescue Carol, from shock and awe, using helicopters and spike strips, to subtler means, like a routine traffic stop with a staged arrest. They also considered broadcasting a statewide Be on the Lookout alert for Skits' red 2010 Chevy Silverado. In the end, agents settled on a measured step. Intel suggested Skits would be picking up a half pound of dope in Abilene, so agents opened a conference call with gang specialists at the Texas Department of Public Safety office there. "Be ready," the feds said. "We might need you to rescue a confidential informant." Oblivious to the plan, Skits and Carol smoked a bowl of crystal meth as the miles dissolved on Interstate 20 West. A collection of downmarket hotels and used car lots announced Abilene as the late afternoon sun sagged toward the horizon. Skits tracked north around the city's fringe, passing one exit after another until civilization feathered back into solitude. No one knows why he didn't stop. Skits spent much of the next 2 hours on his cell phone. Carol could only hear one side of the conversations, but by the time they arrived at his apartment in Odessa, he seemed ready to snap. The ABT general used his index finger like an ice pick, stabbing at a cell phone screen. "Get over here," he said, voice cold, when gang members answered the call. We need to talk. Minutes later, two ABT hardliners knocked at the door to his apartment. I thought I was done right there, Carol said. They could have easily taken me out in the desert somewhere, shot me, and dumped my body. Heart fluttering, she stood at the kitchen sink and waited for the worst. The first man planted himself in the living room, arms crossed, avoiding eye contact. The other strolled across the room and wrapped her in a hug. Relief washed over Carol. Skits returned her cell phone and she ducked into a back bedroom to let the men talk. Soon after, the front door shut and a truck backed out of the driveway. Carol typed a message to Lair. With Skits in Odessa, do not call or text.
If you want to look at it, I never will be completely straight because I don't see a foreseeable future not taking medication. I am bipolar. I'm extremely bipolar. It does run in my family. I don't see my future without taking medication.
Carol's cool-under-pressure persona belies her naturally nervous state, one intensified by meth. Quivering voice, uncertain eyes, wan smile. So how did a woman with an anxiety disorder, who picks her cuticles until bloody, become one of the investigation's smoothest operatives? I didn't walk around and think about it all the time. I acted, she said. If I flinched, that was my life. Carol evolved by natural selection. I turned myself into who I needed to be, she said. I was cute and I knew what to do. I was tall and blonde with blue eyes. I was an Aryan princess. Addiction taught her to say and do anything for a fix, to mutate into a malleable form of herself, a softening process accelerated by abusive boyfriends and the ABT. The transformation began at 12 years old, as Carol experimented with sex and drugs, trying to fit in with 20-year-olds, and soon after as a stripper and prostitute, squabbling over the price of her self-respect, and later as a young woman with bruised ribs and a broken spirit, welcoming her role as a featherwood. Until now, as a junkie and journeyman spy, risking her life to please a federal agent. They manipulated me, sure they all did, Carol said. But there was no way I wasn't going to go to Odessa and finish it and get him arrested. There was no way I was going to give up on that. Police pressure most CIs into cooperating. After arresting them for other crimes, police offer a deal. Either work for us or go to jail. But Carol had no serious charges hanging over her and wasn't obligated to the feds. Steve always told me I could bail anytime, she said, but I wanted to finish what I'd started. Skill helped Carol capitalize on opportunities, but she says luck kept her alive. Hours before she and Skits arrived in Odessa, suspicions had drifted toward others who could have been the snitch. A drug addict with an unpaid debt, and a former featherwood with a grudge. The guys in Odessa were so much more hardcore and violent. I knew it was dangerous, she said, but I had no idea exactly how dangerous. Skits's boots battered the front porch when he returned from meeting with other ABT officers. He grabbed a Bud Light from the refrigerator and motioned for Carol to sit beside him on the couch. All the rumors have been squashed, he said. You're good. He took a long pull on his beer, waiting for her reaction. Carol read the ruse. She wrapped her arms around his shoulders and tucked her head under his chin. You know I'm a down feather, she said, voice tinged with relief and indignation. I'd never do that, ever. For now, Skits seemed to buy it. Even so, federal agents worried. They monitored the gang's chatter over the next few weeks, phone calls, emails, and other conversations, and what they heard was occasionally ominous. Gang members talked about the need to take care of the snitch, a featherwood. But as quickly as suspicion seemed to coalesce around Carol, it would shift to others. The ABT was always dangerous, but now it was unpredictable, like an injured animal backed into a corner, and each arrest was a poke with a stick. Carol's intel had gutted the ABT in Odessa. Federal, state, and local authorities had taken down the region's three senior officers under Skits, and three drug dealers. Carol couldn't be linked to the arrests, but suspicion flared after gang members discovered court papers referring to a confidential informant. Carol knew Skits was her best chance at survival, so she snuggled close to the middle-aged meth addict. He trusted me, she said, because I never gave him a reason not to trust me. Every once in a while, the general seemed to slip. He'd casually drop information, gossip about a gang member, or an intriguing detail about a drug buy, and then wait, listening for the tidbit to echo elsewhere. Carol passed every test. I wouldn't tell anybody in the Brotherhood, she said, but I was telling the cops. Carol remembers other brothers trying to rattle her, too, but she was freebasing a lot of crystal meth that month and admits she can't be sure what was real and what was the product of a misfiring mind. She heard a man whisper in her ear, "I know you're a snitch and I know you're a liar." Another took the tone of a confidant, "It's okay, you'll be dead soon." And others dripped with sarcasm, "You're a nasty bitch. Who do you think you're fooling?" But Carol is set in concrete sure about one exchange, in part because people talked about it for days. "Carol, you're family and I love you," a brother told her one night. He went on to explain, "Not long ago, an officer sent him to Dallas to kill Carol. But for some reason, the final order never came through. If they tell me again, I will do the same thing," he said, eyes flat. Then he broke into a grin. "But it's all good." He hugged Carol and walked away. In late January, the feds picked up a worrisome new word in ABT chatter. Conversations shifted from whether to kill Carol to when. Skits was planning another long drive back to North Texas. He was going to buy 2 pounds of crystal meth in Fort Worth and flip it for a profit outside Houston. Sometime during the drug run, agents say, he intended to execute Carol. Before leaving Odessa, Skits quit his job, swapped his well-known red pickup for a nondescript gray sedan, and arranged to pick up a handgun in Abilene. He told ABT officers Carol wouldn't be coming back.
"I'm calling James Sampsill." "What's up, ugly motherfucker?"
Carol and Skits planned to leave for Dallas around lunch, but bowls of meth burned until almost midnight. They sat for hours in a post-party buzz, passing a meth pipe back and forth. Intimacy between people is a tough thing to figure, as is loyalty, and the feeling often associated with both, love. Carol felt all those things for Skits. Spend enough time with someone, whether monster or monk, or old meth head with a disfigured face, and connections begin to sprout, a root system of intertwined experiences that feed a friendship. He liked to cuddle up and just sit there and talk, she said. "He was a nice guy. He took care of me." People are not all one thing or another, good or bad, or righteous or wretched. If you don't give up on them, if you're willing to look, you'll find kindness, even in those capable of great cruelty. Carol saw Skits that way. In years to come, she longed for people to see her that way, too. Skits eventually broke the silence. "You know, we could never really be together," he said, voice melancholy. "You don't know that," she said. "If circumstances were different..." Carol has thought about that exchange a lot in recent years, the way the words hung in the darkness, neither of them finishing the thought. "I think he knew it was me," she said. "Maybe he was trying to push me away so he could do what he needed to do." Skits loved Carol. He indulged her appetite for drugs and accepted her eccentricities. But there was a ruthlessness under the surface. "Carol, if it came out that you were the snitch, I'd kill you myself," Skits said. "I wouldn't let anybody else do it because you lied to me, and I'd torture you for hours before I killed you." Carol said, "I believe you." They arrived at the Quality Inn and Suites in Fort Worth, checked into room 138, and decided to mainline a shot of Crystal. Smoking meth feels like strapping into a dragster, a jolt off the line and then a long coast to bleed the speed. Injecting it into the bloodstream takes more time. To dissolve the glass-like pieces in water, draw the milky liquid into a hypodermic needle, and find a vein. But when the rush hits, it's a blow-your-hair-back rocket ride. The side effects are stronger, too. The irrational fear, the in-your-face impulses, the narcissism. Skits stepped into the bathroom to take a phone call. Carol listened outside the door. "I know, I gotta get rid of her," she heard him say. "And then I have to get down to Houston quick." That's when Carol sent a panicked text to the feds. 911. They know it's me. She confronted Skits when he walked into the bedroom. Back and forth, they bickered about who was lying to whom, whether he trusted her, whether what they had was worth saving. Carol clawed for a clue, a solid thing she could stand on, finally pleading, "Tell me one thing that's true." Skits paused a heartbeat too long before answering, "I'm not playing games with your head." That was it. A thunderclap moment in a stormy life. With suspicions swirling and drug-induced voices chattering, Carol tuned into the voice that had kept her alive through it all, a whisper in a windstorm. Intuition? Paranoia? Dumb luck? Whatever the reason, Carol bolted. Skits caught up to her outside the hotel office. "Come here," he said, pulling alongside. "Get in the car." Carol recoiled. "I'm not going anywhere with you." The defiance ignited his temper. "Get in the fucking car now," Skits thundered, face red, slamming his hands against the steering wheel. "Bitch," I said, "get in the car right now." Carol still doesn't know why she didn't listen. Featherwoods always listen. Instead, she walked away. Skits followed her into the hotel lobby. "Just get in the car," Skits said, feigning calm. "I'll take you anywhere you want to go. I'll take you home." Carol darted into a bathroom and turned the lock. Fingers trembling, she dialed one of her handlers as Skits screamed and pounded on the door. The conversation was brief. "I'm done," she said. "Are you sure?" "Yep, it's over." "Okay, hang tight," he said. "We're coming to get you."
My Aryan Princess is written by Scott Farwell and edited by Mike Wilson and Leona Allen. To hear the remaining chapters of the story, visit dallasnews.com/ABT for direct downloads and links to our show in Apple Podcasts and other audio players. You'll also find exclusive DMN subscription offers at dallasnews.com/listen. Thanks for listening.